It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we are all here on this Saturday before Christmas. And I think there'll be a couple of us here the next week and the week after that, right?
I will not be here over the next couple of weeks. I have some upcoming travel that I need to attend to.
I will be here.
Good. Okay. So that's my way of reminding everybody. Don't just assume because it's during the holidays that we're not going to have a live show next week or the week after. That's not true. We will be here. And hopefully you will be here also because, as I always say, if you keep listening, we'll keep talking. And in fact, it's usually harder to shut me up than to get me to talk.
That I can absolutely affirm that statement.
Yeah, I wasn't looking for controversy. Anyway, to the regulars, thanks for always being there. You know who you are, and you know how much we appreciate you. And if you're new to the show, and we're just looking for something different, or if you heard about it, or whatever, we know it's growing by leaps and bounds, so try to stick around and find out why, and we'll let you know that you will probably learn something in the next hour that some of it might even be useful. We kind of hope so. Meanwhile, we will have a trivia question after the first break, and we'll talk about what we want to talk about unless you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, in which case we'll talk about what you want to talk about. And boy, is there a lot to talk to do. Very interesting week. Kind of mixed bag, but quite frankly, I was kind of pleasantly surprised at the overall outcome based on everything that was going on. I'll let Adam speak to that if he agrees with me or not, but we walked away okay.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was mixed. We had the NASDAQ and the S&P both posted small gains, while the Dow posted a small loss. That's sort of the opposite of what's happened this month, with the Dow being the only index that's positive. Well, the NASDAQ and the S&P have small losses. But really what's going on is that we're seeing a period of consolidation in the market, and that's okay. After the year we've had, I'll take it. If we could just end if we just ended right now, I'd be happy with this year. It exceeded my expectations, and I think everyone at this table's expectations by a decent amount. So really nothing wrong with seeing those periods of consolidation. Especially after a big run-up like we've seen over the last 3 years. It was interesting because we saw the market fall in the first half of the week, but then it rebounded pretty strongly on Thursday and Friday and had some really good momentum going into the weekend before the holidays. It kind of makes you wonder, is there a little bit of a Santa Claus rally coming next week? Wouldn't shock me if that was the case. The economic news, it was a bit mixed over the week, but it we saw some government reports released where it was kind of we're unsure about how much of the data they were actually able to collect because of the government shutdown. So there's a lot of questions around the accuracy of these reports. And of course, the politicians on both sides were claiming either no, it's right or it's wrong based on whatever narrative they were trying to craft. So it's that didn't help. It added more uncertainty to the overall validity of the reports, but I'm still going to talk about them because they were pretty important reports. And we saw the three that I'm talking about were the November jobs report, the retail sales report, and the CPI report. The jobs report showed a headline number of 64,000 jobs being added in November, which was slightly higher than the 50,000 that was estimated. The unemployment rate ticked up to 4.6% from 4.4%. The report also showed that 105,000 jobs were lost in October and another 33,000 were lost in September. So that brought the net loss for this report down to 74,000 jobs. Now, that sounds terrible, but it's actually not that bad because much of it was due to downsizing in the government, which shed over 270,000 jobs since Trump was inaugurated. In October alone, 162,000 jobs were downsized within the federal government. So that the loss for October was 105, 162 were federal jobs. And so the private sector actually added jobs in October. So
Round of applause.
Yeah. So like I said, it wasn't as bad as it sounded. Another 6,000 of the jobs that were shed in November were federal government jobs as well. So so really not that bad overall. Private sector payrolls were increased by 52,000 in October and 69,000 in November. And the increase in the unemployment rate was due to 323,000 new entrants into the labor force, which is actually a good thing. Those people were sitting on the sidelines, not looking for work, and now they are. That makes the unemployment rate go up, but it isn't really a negative for the overall economy. So just a couple of things to keep in mind when you're looking at the numbers. One other point from that report was average hourly earnings rose 0.1% month over month, but they're now up 3.5% year over year. So that's a positive for workers as well. The retail sales report wasn't bad, but it did miss expectations. It came in flat month over month versus an expectation that it would be up 0.1%. Much like the last report, it's not as bad as it sounds. Retail sales are up 3.5% year over year. And for this month, if you exclude automobile sales, retail sales were up 0.4%, more than double the expectation of 0.2%. The biggest drop was in autos, and this was because of the tax credit for up to $7,500 for buying electric vehicles expired in September. That pushed a lot of buying into the third quarter, and so we're not seeing those vehicles get sold today. And that really explains the entire retail sales lower than expectations miss. So kind of an interesting phenomenon with government incentives and what happens when they go away.
Yeah, gasoline's falling too. So people are spending, if you use the same amount of gas that you usually do, you're going to be paying less right now. That hurts the look of the sales, but it sure helps the sales.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you look at core sales, that takes out autos, gas, and building mm-hmm. materials. That was actually up 0.6% month over month. That's a really strong number. And then the best number of the month was that non-store retailers, think Amazon, they increased 1.8% month over month as holiday shopping kicked off. That's a big number. That is a really good omen for the Christmas sales season, I think.
I think it's the first year that nobody really has been telling us that Christmas was going to be worse than last year.
It's so odd because everyone's saying how bad the economy is, but that's one thing that people are very positive about.
Yeah, you could. Well, Adam and I grew up watching this stuff. And it was a household joke every year. Well, don't expect this year to be as good as last year.
Always.
And then, of course, it would come in. They'd do the numbers, and it would be way better than last year. And this year, we were both a little taken aback because we weren't hearing that thing about, oh, it's going to get worse before it gets better. So I just hope that their string of being wrong doesn't get extended.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that would be bad news at this point. So there's a lot to talk about out there and a lot to look at, but basically things are looking pretty good. We do need to spend a few minutes talking about the real rate of inflation and the reports that happened this week, because it was pretty good. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
I'm Adam Vanway.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And Joey had a comment before I give out the trivia question for today.
Yeah, Adam was talking about positive private sector job growth, which, as we said, just doesn't agree with the sentiment that we're seeing as the overall story right now. People are saying the economy is bad, but if job growth is good, then I'm a little bit confused. Well, Vanguard just did a study, and the findings are very interesting. What they looked at was, how are AI-sensitive jobs doing? Are they growing at a lesser rate than jobs that really aren't that sensitive to AI automation at this point? What is the state of them? What they found is that recent growth in jobs for job occupations that have high sensitivity to automation protocols for AI technology are growing twice as fast in number as anything that is not in that category, and the wage growth is significantly higher. And so the takeaway from that is AI, at least in the short term so far, has been augmenting these jobs and allowing people to be more productive. And as a result, companies want more of these people, and they're willing to pay them more for the work that they're able to accomplish. I thought that was fascinating.
There's a new concept out there that's something like slop, that means all the man hours that are spent correcting AI That's yeah. part of it.
Yeah,
they need people to correct it.
Adam sent me that article this morning.
Yeah, there was a reporter. We get these requests for comments on different yeah. news articles, and a reporter sent it out to the group, and it was like asking about AI slop, and that's a term I'd never heard before, and I sent it to Joey and just said, AI slop, question mark? What is that?
Yeah, well, I was like, who gets to make these
yeah.
terminology?
That's a terrible name,
yeah.
by the way.
I think it probably is an acronym for something, but maybe not.
Sounds like
maybe it's just what it is.
Yeah, I
sounds
don't
like
know.
The future of prison food served to you by AI.
Yeah.
Love it.
Anyway, as usual, we do have a trivia question. And as always, it's been sponsored by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. We had an interesting thing happen in the market this month. You've heard us talk for a long time about the SOX, in other words, the semiconductor index. For about the last 10 years or so, the semis have been what they call the new transports. The old theory was you could tell how the economy was going to do when transportation was picking up because more goods were moving from to more places.
I still think that's true.
Oh, I do too, absolutely. And you could see it after things like Hurricane Katrina. The east-west traffic on trucks and railroads was unbelievable mm-hmm. for the next year or two. But anyway, a lot of people now have dubbed the semiconductors the new transports. And the reason is because the great growth in our society over the last 10 years or so, 20 years really, has been largely in electronic type things. And what do you need for electronics? You need semiconductors. So as goes the semiconductors, supposedly goes our economy, at least in the near term. So we've had the fifth occurrence ever of having these semis hit a 52-week high, and in the next 5 days, they corrected by over 10%. And that does not happen very often. Interestingly, in the four priors, 1 year later, these semis were up nicely. On average, how much did the semis gain in the 12 months following those four super corrections? So it's just a percentage between zero and limitless. Well, not limitless. But.
I just, on a whim, Googled, or actually ChatGPT'd, how many semiconductors are in the average new car.
Oh.
It's between 1,000 and 3,000 chips in every new car. So that's how important they are to the economy.
No. That's why I only buy cars from like 2004.
You guys remember like 70,000 during the supply chain problems that we had? When was that? Yeah, I don't.
2021. Are you talking about car when the car chips was a big problem?
Yeah, yeah. And there were cars that were built sitting on every lot in the U.S. Mm-hmm. waiting for somebody to go in there and plug a semiconductor into this port and that port and the other port. Once they got them, then they could drive the cars.
That's why used car prices soared during that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, this little oddity has in the past not been, it hasn't foreseen a problem, or it hasn't forecast a problem, or at least correctly didn't forecast a problem in the industry. The industry moved right past it. By how much on average? That's what I want to know. Oh, and by the way, those occurrences happened, one in 1997, and two in 99, and one in 2000. And those last three were during the sort of meltdown, if you'll remember the dot-com meltdown. Mm-hmm. Those three occurrences happened in less than 1 year's time. So it's been since 2000 that this has happened. That's why it kind of caught my eye. Interesting. Okay, back to this inflation report that came out Thursday.
That was the last thing I wanted to talk about, the CPI report. Do you want to take it? Or
no, go ahead.
Okay. That came out. It showed that inflation ticked up 0.2% over the 2 months ending in November because there was no report for the previous month. So not bad for a two-month span. Year over year, the number sits at 2.7%, which is below the long-term historic average of 3%. The problem is the Fed, out of nowhere, as we've discussed many times, has now stated that their goal is 2% which I feel is completely ridiculous.
It is.
And but the media has just gathered, like, they just take that number to be gospel. And even though it's been 3% for 100 years, they now say that Trump is responsible for not getting it down to the 2% target. And it's just ridiculous. It makes no sense. Like, who cares about the politics? There's 2% is not, I don't even think it's achievable outside of this weird period prior to 2020, where we basically had no inflation and low interest rates for 15 years. But there's not been another time where that has happened that I know of.
That first, that same 100 years you were talking about, which is roughly the amount of schooling I got between grade school, high school, college, all that. I studied economics for decades, and full employment was 5%.
Yeah.
We're at 4.6. Yeah. We're up to 4.6. It's been lower than that almost consistently. Why all of a sudden isn't 5% a good number or full employment number?
Yeah.
No one announced it. They just did it.
Right. I don't understand why we changed based on a very snapshot of in the history of the world economy where things were kind of very unusual to have that low interest rates and that low inflation and almost full employment or under full employment for that entire time. It was like a Goldilocks economy for 15 years.
Yeah. And then maybe because of politics, I don't know, but something changed it. And you always got to be a conspiracy theorist to a degree. As J.D. Vance said the other day, yeah, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I believe the conspiracies that are true. The difference between conspiracy and truth is 6 months. That was brilliant. Yeah. I wish I'd said that.
Yeah.
I got to give him credit, though.
Anyways, one of the reasons that the CPI number over the last 4 years has been so high has been rents. Rents have been increasing at shocking rates during that time, but that is not the case anymore. Over the last 2 months, it's increased just 0.2%. There were actually several notable categories that saw prices come down in this report, including airfares dropping 6.6%. I think we can all celebrate that. Hotels were down about 1.7%, and apparel was down 0.7%. And lastly, vehicle insurance was down 0.4%. Those, I think, across the board, we can call big wins for the economy, because those were all things that have gotten pretty crazy here in the last 4 or 5 years. The craziest thing is that I read countless stories trying to blame tariffs for this elevated, and I quote unquote elevated, inflation numbers. Well, first of all, as I said before, these aren't elevated inflation numbers, and I do not see any direct consequences of tariffs in my day-to-day life. I don't know if you feel differently, but call us if you do. But I just am not seeing it. The prices for the last year have been relatively stable, and I'm just not seeing it.
I mentioned a couple times in the last month or so, the problem with all the tariffflation advocates is they think that tariffs directly impact prices more than anything else. Well, there's two parts of this. One of them is a tariff can change the price level, but inflation is not a change in price level. Inflation is a series of things that happen where prices are rising constantly due to whatever factors. A one-time jump up is not technically inflation. It's a change in price level. But the real thing is that they're measuring the wrong thing. Tariffs have much more influence on unemployment than they do on prices. So if you want the unemployment rate to rise, a good way to do it is tariffs. And what happens is there's less demand for things. People lose jobs because of that. So if you look at what's happening and you look at the analysis of it, there's kind of a big disconnect. And I will guarantee you that most of that disconnect has a direct link to politics.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if we spent 15 years under 5%, which, as Adam said, historically is a very healthy place to be, what the news are running out of stuff to talk about. If they can't scare the pants off you, why are you going to keep watching? So, all right, let's just lower the bar. 4% seems to be something we can jump over and below. all the time. Let's get back to that.
And also, if you want to know what's happening with inflation, look at the M2 supply of money. That is, it's a monetary phenomenon. The more money that's in the economy, the more likely you're going to see inflation. And as that contracts, you're going to see less inflation. That's where we are right now. And in fact, a lot of economists who follow these things expect inflation to continue to trend lower in the coming years.
All right, we have to sign off for a short break and pay some bills, and then we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have a word about Mitt Romney and some things that are relative to stupidity. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Sometimes I crack myself up. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
I'm Adam Vanway.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I remind everybody the lines are open, 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK. And the trivia question is there. On average, after a quick correction in semiconductors, on average, what is the increase, the percentage increase in semiconductors over 12 months? I'll put it this way. It's not insignificant. That might give people a little bit of a clue. I mentioned Mitt Romney. He wrote an op-ed yesterday, I believe it was, that was borderline insanity for what is obviously a very bright person. He said, essentially,
He wanted taxes to go up, right?
That was the worst part of it. He wanted taxes on the wealthy people to rise because of the level of the national debt. And that's just ridiculous.
It's backwards thinking is what it is. It's not tackling the problem. The problem is out of control government spending with no caps, no checks and balances. They just increase it every year. It's to a point where, I mean, our national debt is, what, $38 trillion or something? It's insanity.
It is.
So taxing the rich is not the answer to the problem. It is maybe one thing that could slightly help it, but it really wouldn't help it very much because then they'd just take that additional revenue and spend that too.
It's like if you just made this a household situation and you've got a high-income person, but they've got a ton of debt, and then you say, we're just going to jack up the credit card payments, but you keep spending how you've been spending, and we're not going to worry too much about it.
Right.
It's not going to make it.
What does it do?
It's the underlying problem that is the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, he also said, and he was right about this, too, he said we need to index Social Security to the increase in life expectancy. And I've been arguing that for a long time. But they recently did that, and that was not a bad thing. So, you know, you got to be careful what you say when you're supposedly sort of a revered and knowledgeable person, which he has been, maybe not so much lately, but that it's not the answer. You know, I talk about this a lot, too. You cannot pay for anything. Congress can't pay for anything. So when people bring bills to the floor, and it's going to involve cost, as everything does when you're dealing with the government. They say, well, you got to pay for it. Meaning if you're going to spend money, you got to raise somebody's taxes. That's what most people on the left say. But you can't pay for anything. We're adding to the debt at $1 trillion a year. We just round it off. You have to stop spending that trillion before you can pay one penny.
That's right.
And you can't take this, even the, let's use the tariffs as an example. You can't use the tariffs to pay down the national debt. The tariffs reduce the deficit, which is still rising.
Right.
And then annually, you move that over on the scoreboard, and you put it on the debt side instead of the deficit side, and you start bringing up a new deficit. There is no way the government can pay for anything until spending goes down $1 trillion a year.
Yeah. And the thing is, the other thing about tax the rich or increasing taxes, it doesn't work. You end up generating less revenue for the government when you raise taxes because economic activity declines, which is more harmful to the economy. And you end, I mean, it's a really good way to potentially put us into a recession.
Yeah. Ronald Reagan sat down with a very young Art Laffer back in the 80s, and they were having lunch, and there was a napkin there, and Laffer started to explain to Reagan what became known as the Laffer curve. And it's a trade-off between interest rates and unemployment, or tax rates and unemployment, and that sort of thing. And Reagan looked at it and said, I like that. So Reagan's approach to that was to take the high marginal tax rate of 70% and reduce it to 28%, which he did. And guess what? Things got so much better.
The economy went crazy.
And the part that nobody wants to talk about ever, revenues to the government doubled after that.
Mm-hmm.
It is not static. That's the word I'm looking for. If you try to do a static analysis of things like that, you're always going to be wrong. What matters is people and what people do in reaction to what governments do. It's exactly the same as we were talking about in the charitable gifting. The charitable gifting, when Reagan was doing this, one of the talking points or shouting points from the left was, well, all these charities are going to just bleed dry. Nobody's going to give money to a charity because the only reason they do that is to save 70% on taxes. Well, guess what? First year, 28% charitable giving went up. People had more money. It's the way people think that if you don't look at that and you're talking economics, you're wrong. You're guaranteed to be wrong because people change. It's dynamic, and they won't allow the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, to use dynamic scoring.
The other thing you have to take into account is that a dollar in the private sector is worth so much more than a dollar run through the government, because the government effectively destroys the value of a dollar. That dollar, once moves into government coffers, is probably worth 50 cents or less, whereas in the private sector, that dollar will be spent and actually create more value. It's probably worth $1.50.
$2.50 is the historical number. That's called the velocity of money. How many times a dollar is spent when, I'll go to Publix and buy whatever, and the people who made that whatever get paid from them. It goes around and around. That dollar can do a whole big turnaround, and it keeps moving. The economy grows. The velocity, they said, when I was studying, I don't know if it's changed a bit, it was 2.5, and it was about 1 in the government.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's that big hole in the lake. Like you take your boat, same thing. You throw money down that hole, and you never see it again. That if we could teach classical economics to everybody in this country, the government would absolutely be disbanded and reconstituted with smart people.
Yeah. Well, people like Thomas Sowell never come up in economic discussions.
Nope.
But how many books does that guy have? 35? And they're just all phenomenal.
I don't even know what the number is.
Yeah, I mean, the guy doesn't stop, and he never comes up in academia. We study some good people there, but it's very narrow.
Yeah, it actually should be taught more. I've often mentioned that I'm very happy that that Governor DeSantis has started the ball rolling on having personal finance get back into the curriculum, and now there are 30 states doing the same thing.
Yeah.
This can only be good for long run for the country. One final note about the market. Yesterday was the last quadruple witching day of the year. And what that means is stock index futures, stock index options, stock options, and single stock futures all expire on the same day. And that the true definition of quadruple witching is the last hour of that Friday. And you can see in history, if you look, very often that'll be awful. It'll be a terrible, terrible day. And other times, no. Well, yesterday it wasn't great, but you wouldn't even know it if you weren't watching that it was quadruple witching. So I think the market is stable enough to say that next year could be pretty good. You guys agree with that?
Yeah, if you look at the yesterday was a really good day.
Yeah.
There wasn't any indication towards the end of the trading day that it was anything going on other than normal trading.
Right. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Well, first of all, I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas to the crew. And I did get the Publix card, so thank you.
Great.
Yeah, that was great. I just wanted to bring something up that's near and dear to your heart. I was reading an article about how LNG is going to potentially play a very important role in the AI rollout since it's available. And, you know, it's something that the these data centers can tap into because of the existing infrastructure. The only problem is that we have several export terminals, and I think there are six more that's approved for export. And based on the article that I read, there isn't really enough capacity to service both. So, you know, obviously America First would probably go inside, but the problem there is you can, you know, pump the, get the gas out of the ground here and then sell it in Asia for, you know, 10x or better over the spot price here. So I'd like to hear your comments since I know you've been hanging in with LNG for a long time.
Yeah, that might be true today, but it sounds like it wouldn't be true for very long if what you're saying is accurate. I think that the market would reprice that in a way that would put it to the best use. So unfortunately, that probably means prices would go up here, and that's not what we need right now. And that's been a big topic, too, with these data centers and their massive need for electricity. So I expect more regulation to come down in surrounding that in the not too distant future.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. You're probably right. I'll shoot you the article over the weekend.
Yeah.
But you know, market forces are what they are. You know, it tends to go to the best price, to the to the best bid. So. Yeah, it's interesting to see because, you know, without, you know,
Greg,
that's the bottleneck in AI right now is the energy.
Greg, can you hold for a couple minutes?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back and finish up with Greg. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
I'm Adam Vanway.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we're going right back to the phones.
So I just wanted to finish up real quick. You know, the pinch point right now in AI is the electrons. So, you know, trying to roll out a nuclear plant here or there is going to take several years and a ton of money versus LNG. So until we can get that figured out and get that up and running, AI is really at a choke point. Or will be soon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
That's pretty well known. You know who's been building those little nuke plants now?
The Chinese are way ahead of us on this.
Yeah, well, we've got some guy named Trump is starting up. He's the major shareholder. The kids are really running it. But the symbol is DJT, which, you know, go figure that. It went up 46% one day this week when they announced they were getting into these small and on-site nuclear reactors and merging with a company that does that.
Okay.
There's a couple other small companies doing it. Another one is called Valar. It's a private company. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, for numbers, I think China has something like 30 thermonuclear reactors being built right now because the regulatory landscape's wide open for them to do that.
You know who else has a lot of them going on?
Who?
France.
Wow.
I thought.
Yeah. Isn't that nuts?
That surprises me.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's the one thing they seem to do right.
Coming into the Trump administration, we had three.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, that's not a good start.
No.
But he's kind of cleared the lanes.
Yeah, Adam was working on it when Adam was pounding rocks, so to speak, and still in concrete. He had the nuclear plants going on, and they stopped him.
There was one being built on the west coast of Florida. They stopped it.
Wow.
Yeah, Greg, did you want to take a shot at the trivia?
Well, let me just finish up with this.
Oh, Shane, please do.
That's why there are so many data centers being built in the Permian section of of Texas is because it's so close to the natural gas that they can actually get it cheaper than they would if they were to get it from the Henry Hub in Oklahoma.
Nice.
I'll take a shot at the question once I know what that is.
Okay. We just had a five-day period in which the semiconductors dropped over 10%, a true correction, and it started the day after they set a new 52-week high. This is the fifth time it's happened. What happened to semiconductors the four other times, 1 year following that quick, sudden meltdown? What percentage up were they? And it's hefty.
Well, I can tell you that the SMH is at a just touched a channel low, so it's a great opportunity to look for a trade to go long. But percentage wise, the upper channel is pretty high. I'm going to just take a guess at this. It looks like maybe. I was just looking at this morning. Dang. If I would have known the question, I would have had the answer already.
Well, that proves we don't send it out in advance.
I should try remote viewing then. I'm going to say like 38%. That's a wild guess.
It's substantially too low.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, then I'll be sure to get in the trade on Monday.
I'm thinking when you hear the number, you'll do exactly what you just indicated.
We can neither bless nor reject that trade.
Nope.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, thanks for the call. Have a very Merry Christmas.
I will. You too. We'll talk to you in New Year.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, 38 is too low. So, you know, people worry about the semis when they see these things going on. But somehow, the reason that they're called the new transports is when things are going well, they do very well. Well, I got this one on my bad pile. You know, for the years and years and years on this show, how much we detest it when the lawmakers don't settle things before they leave town for the year. So we as tax planners always have to figure out what the hell they're up to.
So annoying.
Guesses.
So annoying.
Guess what happened Thursday night? With all kinds of things undone, the House of Representatives packed it up and went home a day early.
Yep.
That is all I'm going to say about that.
Not surprising.
Not really. All right, let's switch the other way a little bit. I was talking about the Trump accounts and how the Dells came in and added on to that big time, like $6.25 billion. And in my blog last week, I wrote that I'm going to watch for other rich people to come in and add to this. This thing could get really big and it could get there fast. Well, Ray Dalio came in this week, and BlackRock came in this week doing the Trump account thing. It was authorized in the act that companies could do this for the children of their employees, and anybody, like a private Ray Dalio, can do it in general. And said several of them, MasterCard, Visa, Uber, and Charter Communications, already contributing to the Trump account thing.
Nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's kind of new news. It made sense to me when I predicted it, and I'm very happy to see it come back and say I was right. You guys got something you want to talk about? You know, I can throw topics out every day, but if there's something on your mind before Christmas or just in general, shoot it out. We got 5 minutes.
I did want to say I saw a stat that led me to believe that there is – so part of the new tax bill was this feature where you can deduct capital expenses – for a small business, all in year one, in the year you make the purchase.
Yep.
So why is that interesting? Why is that important? It's really important because it changes the way that people who own businesses think about making big purchases. If you have to depreciate something over 5, 10, 30 years, it makes it less attractive in a lot of cases to buy it. And you might put off buying something because you don't get the benefit of it from a tax perspective right away. Well, that has changed. So if you're looking at a multi-million dollar purchase, you may decide to pull it forward now into this year. And that creates a lot more economic activity. Yep. We kind of knew this might be happening, just anecdotally. But this week I saw that private jet sales are up 11% from a year earlier and 30% from a year before that. Now, why do you think that is? What is a really maybe unnecessary purchase that you get a huge tax deduction to buy? Yeah, a private jet.
There's some trucks and such, too, that are covered in that. And you're right, these things are going crazy.
Yeah, it's...
Again, taxes are influencing behavior.
Absolutely. They always do. People underestimate how much they do, especially with a business owner.
Exactly.
Well, it's a dollar velocity accelerator, I guess, right? Yeah, bonus appreciation.
All right, I'm going to throw this one out to you two for a comment. Dave Ramsey said this week that people should start planning for long-term care expenses when they turn 60. It's all yours.
Way too late. Yeah. you can't do it at that point. I understand the sentiment around that comment. Like you most people probably can't afford to start thinking about it until then. But if you want long-term care insurance, you better start thinking about it in your 50s. Because by age 60, you're not going to like the price tag.
Well, that is definitely true. And then if you just step back more broadly, like what dollars are you talking about? How many people want to work that long after 60? So unless you're just going to take something from the retirement pot, arbitrarily label it potential long-term care expense pot, where is this coming from?
Right? Yeah, I mean, exactly.
You need income to really make some agency there.
Yeah, even if you're thinking about buying a hybrid policy, like a annuity policy or something like that, you need years to fund something like that.
You need years to fund it. And I would argue by your early 50s, you know, this is when it matters, like you said. And then secondly, you kind of know the velocity of your retirement plan if you really sit down and take a look at it properly. And you'll know, like, am I at risk of running out of money if I have to self-insure something like that? And that's when you start to plug in solutions.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's add another discussion. How about medical underwriting at age 60 versus age 50?
Yeah, it's not going to be better. That's
no.
For sure.
And the real long-term insurance plans are the ones that are really insurance. They're very strict on their underwriting. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about a couple at 50 who are going to 60 and they're going to start. The compound probabilities of one or the other needing it go way up. But what goes up even higher is the compound probability that they won't be able to have it underwritten.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's happening to Susie Orman and Dave Ramsey, but they're drinking the wrong water these days. Both of them have tended to go a little goofy this year. I don't know why. But this is just ridiculous in my
I'm glad he's raising the topic. It's probably not talked about enough, but for listeners, the average long-term care claim for a woman is 2 years. The average long-term care claim for a man is 3 years. And if you want to get an idea of what costs would be like for different levels of care, you can go to genworth.com's cost of care study, put in your zip code and figure out what it would cost locally.
I warn you, it is not cheap.
Yeah, it's not going to be a fun number. But
92.6% the next 12 months when you see action like you saw in semiconductors this particular week.
Wow.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
It really does.
Greg, I think, has a plan made.
He does, I'm sure.
Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. We will be live next week. Don't forget that, and we will see you then. Thanks for listening and all.